You are listening to WXRW LP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and River West Radio. Well, it's going to be one of those days. RiverWestRadio.com all over the world. That means globally. It is, for the time being, still River West Radio's fundraiser. So please remember, go to RiverWestRadio.com. Click on that big donate button and give whatever you can. You can set that up to be a monthly donation, which would be the absolute best way of doing that. You can join our Patreon if you want to get some kind of reward other than just the happy sparkle that you would get on the inside of your body from knowing that you are supporting an incredibly passionate community of producers and volunteers and people who want to see local radio here in River West really thrive and grow. Hello once again, and welcome to The Anti. I am your host, NTSC. This is a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and a lot more. And then this is the part of the show where I always ask, if we're against so much, what the hell do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. And then I say that this series is going to be one in which we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. And I recently read something, just some meme online, essentially, that said it's less important to be against things and much more important to be for something. And I am for something, and all of the people with whom I am working here in the city of Milwaukee and abroad are for something, for one big thing. And it takes many forms and it has many faces, and many people are kind of moving the work along, and it can be called many things. And if you've listened to any episodes of this show, all of which are available in archived form at creamcitymedia.com/anti, if you've listened to any other episodes of this show, you know what I am for. I am for the emancipation of the human family. There's a lot of things that go into the emancipation of the human family. And again, we've talked about them here on this show. Some of those very basic concepts are worker ownership, primarily of the means of production. We've talked about that. One of those concepts is prison abolition, because prisons serve nobody. Prisons focus only on punishment and not on rehabilitation. They do not focus on justice. They only focus on earning a profit off of slave labor. So prison abolition is a very basic concept that I am for. I'm for community defense. I'm against the police, which is one of the reasons I am for community defense. I am for restorative justice. I am for transformative justice. One of the reasons I am against the police and the military. I'm for common property, which means I am against the misuse and the hoarding of things that people need and could use. I'm for direct democracy, which means I am against representative parliamentary democracy, because more often than not, that is not democratic. It does not actually give a voice to the majority of people. It gives representative rights to a tiny oligarchy who can lie as much as they want during their campaign and then do essentially whatever they want, which more often than not in this system is the directive of the status quo and those in power. I am for direct democracy, which gives everybody a direct, immediate voice in the governance of their lives. And I am for, and this is the really big one that we mentioned earlier, just this episode, I am for emancipation. And emancipation means the abolishment of the wage system. It means the abolishment of capitalism. It means the abolishment of slavery. Emancipation means giving back our lives to ourselves and taking away the pernicious control of those who currently rule us. Those that rule us are not what you think they are. A lot of people look up and they think, oh, the government has got their hands up all in my business and I don't like it. Very happily ignoring the fact that their boss rules over them with an iron fist 40 hours a week or more. Okay, so this has been a very long introduction for what the topic of this episode is. This week's episode is going to be about transition. And I think we've talked about it a little bit in episodes past. Let's find out together in real time while I go to creamcitymedia.com/anti to peruse the archives. And no, it doesn't actually look like we've talked specifically about transition. However, there is a concept that we have talked about. Episodes 44 and 45, we read a really great piece of writing in what I've colloquially dubbed the Anarchist Book Corner. They're available at the Democratic Socialists of America's Libertarian Socialist Caucus website. It's a great piece of writing that was written by a fellow Wobbly from Milwaukee about dual power. So this episode is going to be about transition. We've often postulated as to what the future is going to look like here on this show. In a few different episodes, we have kind of gone on thought journeys about what our future could actually look like. First episode of which was very early in the series in episode 8, where we thought about what we may be able to accomplish together with our awesome shared potential. And then the second of which was 41, somewhat recently. What we didn't do in those episodes was consider some or one of the necessary transitional periods that might be necessary. And we won't focus on it in this episode either, but there's lots of different ways that we can get to the future. Some of them are very grim and bleak. Some of them are very hopeful and peaceful. I'm not going to pretend to know the answers. I'm not going to pretend to be able to prognosticate the future. So transition might be violent, and there might be very little that we can do to stop that. Being a member of the industrial workers of the world, I think that that belies or that displays a certain optimism, a certain positivity. Why is that? Well, because the tactics of the industrial workers of the world and similar solidarity unions, the tactics employed are, by their very nature, nonviolent. Now, that does not necessarily mean that the working class, while partaking in these actions, have been met without violence. In fact, that is not the case at all. Just one example that we can look at is the Ludlow Massacre. And maybe we'll have to take more time to talk about that later. But it was one of the most violently oppressive and suppressive acts on American soil, all directed violently against the working class who were just trying to defend themselves at their workplace. The capitalist class will never, ever hesitate to use its legislative arm to indirectly weaken progressive movements through policy, but they will also do it through the military arm, which is always violent. But the IWW believes through working class solidarity, we can leverage our power at our places of work to change the world. Well, there's other people that believe this as well. beyond our places of work, though, and this is going to be the focus of the rest of this episode, is our communities, how we interact together, how we relate to one another, and crucially, how we organize ourselves in this, in our neighborhoods, in our municipalities, in our towns, in our villages, how we work together, how we organize to try and achieve a peaceful transition to emancipation. I hope and I pray that it is still possible, because the alternative is a protracted people's war. It's a protracted proletarian violent revolution. And there are lots of those happening now. At time of recording, it's late 2019. And there are quite a few uprisings happening. Hong Kong is the one that you're going to see most often talked about on the mainstream media, generally because, China is quote unquote a communist economy, but it's absolutely not. You know, if you've done any research into it or even listened to episodes of this show, then you know that China is essentially a state capitalism, because the means of production are owned by the capitalist class. But, that's the Hong Kong is the one that you're going to see most covered. Chile is a really, really big one. We're going to have to talk about all of the various revolutions going on currently in our modern era later. But sadly, that has been the most common outcome from this class struggle. Essentially, just because the capitalist class, the owning class, the employing class, you know, the ruling class doesn't want to give up its power. And so it will defend it using the only tool in its toolbox, which is structural violence and also direct physical violence. But today we're going to focus on a peaceful transition. And there are quite a few ways that we can get there, and we're just going to talk about a few in this episode. We've touched on one tactic, which is dual power and creating dual power structures together to make obsolete the power structures that we've kind of grown up in, you know, that we've been indoctrinated in. Because there are different ways for us to organize ourselves. There are different ways for us to organize society. And those ways are emancipatory. Those ways are directly democratic. And most crucially for our modern era, those ways are ecologically sound, sustainable. And they focus a lot on permaculture and other techniques. So, okay. There's a new kind of swell of popularity of a movement that has been called transition networks. I was first introduced to them under the term transition town or transition community. The lens of this show, as you know, is pretty far to the left. I hesitate to call it radical, actually, if I'm being honest, because these ideas are older than dirt. These ideas are far older than capitalism. These ideas have actually been the way that humans kind of organized themselves for hundreds of thousands of years. Even in some of the most famous totalitarian regimes, humans actually got along without the control of the government or the ruling class. One of the most, I won't say famous, but maybe one of the most useful examples is that of ancient Egypt. The documented historical record of ancient Egypt leaves enormous gaps, and anthropologists somewhat recently have finally been discovering the simple fact that the general population of Egypt weren't actually for huge, and I mean big, long tracks of time, hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, were without a pharaoh. There just wasn't a seated pharaoh on the throne. And so they just governed themselves without the seat of power of the pharaoh. People, they still did the farming, they still did the production, they still did what they needed to do to survive, but they did it themselves. They governed themselves. Of course, it should come as no surprise that the historical record that we are always educated about is the pharaonic periods. But they don't tell the whole story. But anyway, back to transition towns, back to transition movements. So I was saying that the lens of this show is quite left. these traditions are very, very old. Some of the more vocal proponents of the Transition Network are focused more on what is becoming colloquially understood as the just transition. And the just transition, you know, if you hear pundits on television or the radio, or if you hear politicians talk about it, only means how do we transition from this form of capitalism to green capitalism. You know, this is kind of what the Green New Deal is talking about. It wants the creation of more green jobs, and it wants to focus on renewable energy instead of carbon. And that's the scope of their imagination. That's where their conversation begins and ends. Green jobs, more green jobs, more green energy, blah, blah, blah. Totally ignoring the fact that any form of capitalism that commodifies everything that we need to survive and commodifies the whole planet that we live on is never going to solve the existential crisis of climate change. It's never going to do it. And let's not even call it climate change anymore. Let's call it what it is, climate collapse. We are towing ever closer to that line of irrevocable damage. We've talked about this in past episodes. Closer and closer we tiptoe or run, we don't really know is the scariest part of the science, towards a feedback loop where the natural cooling systems of the Earth reverse gear and begin heating themselves up, and then there's nothing we're going to be able to do. Capitalism will never address that. Green capitalism will never address that. That is the version of just transition that you're going to be talked about or that you're going to hear about most often. Just because the mainstream media obviously doesn't want us to dismantle capitalism. It's not in its best interest. But an actual just transition, the one that you really ought to be talking about, the one that hopefully you will be working with me towards, is a process by which we move away from global capitalism and we move towards, I'm not going to use any other ism, I'm going to say we move towards directly democratic control of our lives and emancipation of the human family, because through the emancipation of the human family and the direct democratization of our society, we will achieve transition to an ecologically just system of economy and governance. Okay. And by governance, obviously, I just mean the social, you know, spectrum. From totalitarian to actually free. You know, we want to move towards freedom. We want to move away from hierarchy. We want to move away from totalitarianism. We want to move away from fascism, etc. Okay. What are some of the ways that people are imagining this transition? Well, this takes us back to the very useful tools of dual power. Let's remind ourselves, for those that might not have heard episodes 44 and 45, what dual power is. Dual power is a strategy that is being employed all over the world right now as we speak. And there are quite a lot of dual power projects right here in Milwaukee that you can take part in. So one of the things that we've talked very briefly about, if not in depth, and I can't remember, is the solidarity economy. Economies of solidarity seek to keep the productive capacity of a community in that community, right? In that way, it really reinforces localism, and not the kind of localism where you just go to a small business on the corner and you only buy from them. No, because the odds are very good. They still had a whole bunch of their stuff trucked in from all the way across the country because that's how it's inexpensive. No, I mean truly local. So like an economy of solidarity will seek to create, foster, and grow community gardens. It is going to become, and it already is, very, very critical that we start growing food where we are at. The supply chain is failing us and our planet miserably. One very simple way to begin transitioning towards a more ecological society, one that is actually good for the environment, is to roll up into a gross little package all these terrible techniques for mass-produced farming that we have developed over the years because of the commodification of food. Wrap them up, throw them away. We've talked a little bit about Food Not Bombs. That's one initiative. But even more important is the new initiative that you may have heard of, and it's actually not very new, but it's called Food Not Lawns. All those green, terrible lawns that you see just grass all over the city, what a terrible idea that is. That impoverishes the soil so dramatically. It reduces, obviously, the spaces where wildlife can thrive and grow. That's all the wildlife that we really depend on for our survival. The honeybee initiative, for example, that should really be extended to all insects. The insect population of the earth is in dire straits, and the insect population is one of the most important links in the chain of life, in the cycle of life in our whole planet. And they are dangerously endangered. My sister teaches about bugs. She knows the figures. The population of the insects on this whole planet are plummeting. We need to create spaces for them to grow and thrive. And it doesn't matter if you don't like bugs. Bugs are pretty great and they're essential. And yes, I'm talking wasps. I'm talking yellow jackets. I'm talking hornets. I'm talking beetles and ants and butterflies and moths. Ants. Did I say ants? All of them. Every creepy crawly needs a place to live and thrive. And community gardens and getting rid of your lawn is a big part of that. Okay, so if we're going to remove our lawns, which are totally antiquated concept at this point, and very, 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 very gauche, what are we replacing them with? Well, we're replacing them with fields. We're replacing them with prairies. We're replacing them with wetlands. We're replacing them with food. There are techniques and tactics that were employed by the native indigenous people of this country that stewarded the land and the animals on it and provided abundance for all. And those tactics and techniques were specifically and purposefully ignored by the colonial settlers to make sure that those people could no longer survive on the land which had raised them for hundreds of thousands of years. There's lots of ways that they did that. Killing the buffalo was a big one. Why? Ruminants like that, ungulates like that, are so good for the soil. Because they eat the grass, their hooves move the soil around in a good way, because tilling is not good for the soil. This is another one that we should talk about. We'll probably have to have a whole episode on permaculture because we're getting towards the end here. I got to speed things up a little bit. But their dung, their droppings were so good for the soil. The colonialists, the empire that came and committed genocide on this land, knew what they were doing when they were getting rid of the bison as quickly as they possibly could. They were removing a staple food source, but they were also impoverishing the land that the Native Americans or the indigenous peoples relied so heavily on. So get rid of your lawn. It's bad news. Start growing food. Most importantly, we really need to start giving back to the soil. But again, we'll talk about that again later. So that's just one way. Food Not Lawns, community gardens. Why is that part of a dual power strategy? Well, the less dependent people can become on their grocery stores to feed themselves, the more connected to the cycle of food production they will become, the more cooperative we will need to become, because one person is never really enough to feed the people that are most important to them. You can probably just feed yourself. But the amount of people we can feed grows exponentially the more of us who are involved in actually producing the food. Also, secondary benefit is all of our diets will improve because mass farming of all kinds have created some of the worst, least nutritious food in the history of humanity. And it has led to so many health concerns that are endemic and epidemic globally now. Factory farming being one of the absolute worst. Factory farming is terrifically awful for the environment. It's terrible for the animals. We're raising and slaughtering something like 56 billion animals a year just to eat, and to feed and house those animals and to remove their waste. It is a gross misuse of land. Land that is our shared natural heritage that everybody should have stewardship over, democratically. Okay, so that's just one way. Take back and democratize and communalize the production of food. That's a big one. Tool libraries are another big one. And you'll actually see this if you go to the homepage for thetransitionnetwork.org. You can learn more about the transition towns at transitionnetwork.org. I'll make sure I talk about that before the show ends. So a tool library. We've actually been trying to get a tool library here in Milwaukee for a very long time. You can learn more about that. MKELibrary.org. What is a tool library? Where it's just what it sounds like. It's a lending library, but for physical goods. We've talked a little bit about the fact most privately owned tools only spend about 12 minutes of their entire life actually being used. Your car is parked 95% of its entire lifetime. The most important thing about tools and about goods and about equipment in general is not having it in your house for use at all times, because you don't need it. The most important thing is access when you do need it. That's what a tool library is for. You just go whenever you need a tool, you use it for as long as you need it, you return it for the next person to use. Really simple stuff here. Man, the half hour flies by so quickly, doesn't it? I've got to kind of wrap this thing up already. Okay, a transition town is a way. It is a system, it's a series of tools and techniques being employed right now by groups all over the world, and is crucially here in Milwaukee, to try and take our culture, to take our society, to take our communities out of this dangerous, destructive, coercive, exploitative, manipulative system, and to take control of our lives back. To democratize the use of our spaces, to rebuild our cities and redesign our lives in such a way that we can free ourselves from toil, liberate ourselves to work that is actually meaningful, give ourselves much more time for play, give ourselves much more time to socialize and really, really interact with people in a way that is actually beneficial and creates social bonds instead of ripping social bonds apart. Maybe that's one of the most important differences between a transition town and your typical American city. An American city is really a group of individuals struggling to survive, and they're competing with one another. A transition town is a place where people are supporting one another and working together to build democratically, voluntarily, a system that is better for everybody. We're going to have to do a second episode on this. It's just that simple. There's too much to talk about transition towns, but I think we at least started this kind of a good primer. Thank you for tuning in to The Anti here on River West Radio, WXRWLP Milwaukee 104.1 FM. Go to riverwestradio.com and give generously. Learn more about transition towns. Go to mkelibrary.org and learn more about what a tool library is and maybe help us get that started. There's more great programming. Make sure that you keep tuning in. Hey, Sandy, why don't you tell us what's going on this week here in River West?